Welcome, welcome, welcome everyone to the Simple Actions Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is David. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, David.
Hey, David.
Where's
Shane? For those who care to join us, let's have a moment of silence to do with as you wish, followed by the Serenity Prayer. God.
Grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Amen. The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively, which are across the main foyer and up a small flight of stairs. At this time, please silence your cell phones. I gotta do it. I'll pretend like I'll remember and I won't remember. Remember when Chris Raymer was here and my phone went off when he was talking? I listened to the tape the other day. Also, we respectfully ask those present to please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book, Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA's simple actions. The AA preamble says, Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open Big Book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight, which will be step 4, part 2, fear and sex. Please welcome our panel. Tonight we have Shannon and George. So, we're going to start tonight. Step 4 says, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Page 67. Notice that the word fear is bracketed alongside the difficulties with Mr. Brown, Mrs. Jones, the employer, and the wife. This short word somehow touches every aspect of our lives. It was an evil and corroding thread. The fabric of our existence was shot through with it. It set in motion trains of circumstances which brought us misfortune we felt we didn't deserve. But did not we ourselves set the ball rolling? Sometimes we think fear ought to be classed with stealing. It seems to cause more trouble. Shannon?
I'm Shannon. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Shannon.
My sobriety date is September 15th, 2015. I have a sponsor. I am a sponsor, kind of, most of the time. I have a home group Friday night, so we're at 704 Virginia Beach. It's great. You should check it out. Fear is like, I never thought I was scared. Like, people talked about fear, and I was like, oh, I don't need to worry about that. I'm not scared of nothing. And, you know, I found that to be very untrue when I did my first inventory. Particularly the fact that I thought I was like some big tough person, you know, I'm like, nobody can mess with me. And, and I thought like, oh no, I just don't like people. I'm just an angry person. And it's like, I'm not angry, I'm terrified. And, that still happens to me today. And you know, now that I've done the steps and I continue to do the steps and I have a power greater than myself, I can kind of confront that fear and work through that fear, work against that fear. But, you know, it's huge for me to be, you know, constantly worried about a personal inventory. So, well, not constantly worried, but constantly aware of, you know, the way that I'm behaving and the way that I'm feeling, because fear can run my life if I'm not aware of it. And, you know, I remember the first time I saw it was an evil and corroding thread that the fabric of our existence was shot through with it. I was like, jeez, that's intense. And you know, I finally saw that when I did my inventory, because, you know, I read step four with a sponsor before doing an inventory, and, you know, I had fear on every single thing that I wrote. There was not one thing on my inventory that didn't come with fear. And I love that line that says, "Didn't we ourselves set the ball rolling?" I did that today. I do it all the time. And I like to think that, like, oh, it's everybody else that's the issue. Like, I didn't do anything. It's them. And it's never them. I mean, not to say that nobody can ever do anything wrong, but, like, I always have a part in it, and I didn't see that until I did an inventory, because I thought everybody was so mean to me, and nothing is fair, everybody's just gonna rag on Shannon. And it's like, no, that is not the case. I was very difficult to be around. I was self-centered to the point of driving everybody around me insane. You know, and especially when I was drinking, that self-centeredness, you know, I would steamroll over anybody in my life if it meant getting a drink. And you know, that was no way to live, and it was no way to expect people to live with me happily. Like, with the way I was behaving, I was like, why is everybody so mad at me all the time? And it's like, look at my drinking, and look at what I do, and look at how I act. And, you know, I just leave whenever I want to leave, and come back whenever I want to come back, and, you know, smelling like a brewery, or, like, I smoked a lot of cigarettes in high school, and that was, like, the one thing that drove my parents even crazier than me drinking, and I would, like, reek, and I would look them in the face and be like, I did not smoke a cigarette. And, like, unreal, the things I would lie about. Like, my God, if I said good morning, you'd have to go outside and see if the sun is up. And, you know, just fear, you know, I have to ask God every day, you know, please remove the fear of X, Y, Z. And it's changed throughout my sobriety, because at first it was, you know, help me remove the fear of other people. That was a huge thing for me, because I got to AA, and like I said, I was scared. I thought I hated all of you. I didn't. I was terrified of you. And you know, I was able to pray about that, and to finally just kind of like take that leap and just like actually call people who gave me their phone numbers instead of just saving it in my phone and never calling them. And you know, I still have to actively work against fear. I have to ask God for help, and I have to, like, I have to recognize what it is I'm afraid of too, like, before I start just asking God, like, please remove the fear. It's like, if I don't know what I'm afraid of, it's not really gonna help me all that much. And you know, a lot of things come up for me, like, I have a lot of fear in trusting God. You know, I fall back on self-reliance frequently. You know, I have a big fear of being honest, because it's scary. Like, what if you get mad at me because I told you something you didn't want to hear? Then it's like, I'm going to lie and make everything a lot worse for both of us. And, you know, there's the things that I can't just walk away from. I mean, it is, you know, the fabric of our lives is shot through with it. That doesn't stop because I stopped drinking. You know, it's something I constantly have to be aware of and try to watch out for, because, you know, if I don't pay attention to it, it will absolutely start to run things again. Thank you.
Thanks, Shannon.
Hey, my name is George. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, George.
Whenever I get in front of a microphone, I like to do this Three Stooges impersonation, if you don't mind. Quiet, numbskulls. I'm broadcasting. Yup. Help break the ice, okay? It's a heck of a venue you guys got. I've been sober since 1992, September 11, 1992, 27 years. I'm 54 years old. I started drinking when I was a kid, like a lot of us did. I bounced in and out of here quite a bit. I put the plug in the jug one day at a time since, for the last time, 27 years ago. I also got a home group Sunday night, Birchwood Gardens at 7 o'clock on the boulevard. I'd love to have you there. And I got a sponsor, and I sponsor a couple guys. And I've been sober by God's grace in Fellowship of AA, and I got a beautiful life because of it. And it's an honor, you know, to be able to share that. And it's important for me to remember where that came from, that it didn't come from me. And that anything I have to say, I learned from here and by whatever grace, you know, God gave me. So anyway, getting into this paragraph in the four-step, when I got sober, I was quite interested in talking about my resentments. I had loads of them, man. That was no problem for me to write those down. I had plenty of people I hated. I was wronged by a lot of people. And I didn't really like the idea about filling in the column after it about where I was my fault and what did I do and what, you know, character defect did this represent. But the people that wronged me, I carried that around like as if it were my knapsack, you know. And I was really lucky. I had a terrific sponsor. I got sober in Central Virginia. Excuse me. I actually had two guys. One was super into service, got me going into the prison up there, like my first month in sobriety, to take a meeting in the prison there. And the other guy was super into the book, and he got me through the steps. And he said something like, talking about fears, and he said, "What are you afraid of?" And I said, "I'm not afraid of nothing." A lot like what Shannon had said. And I had been raised, and the way I grew up, I would refuse to say I was afraid of anything. That was the last thing you would say to anybody, especially not a man, but really anybody. And I was sober, and I didn't get into my four-step and be able to admit that I was afraid for a long time. And I used to put on this persona like I was super tough, and I would fight a lot. I boxed a little bit when I was a kid, and I quit it because I didn't have the discipline to stick with it. But I used to fight a lot, and that would be my proof that I wasn't afraid of nothing, it was only not after my first four-step either, but after a number of years in the fellowship, I was able to read and understand some of the stuff, and where it said, as Sharon also mentioned already, about the fabric of my life was shot through with it, that was who I was. And that's a terrific metaphor, an evil and corroding thread. The fabric of our existence is shot through with it. It sums it up for me perfectly, and the truth is that, you know, I'm not immune from that today. You know, it's really important for me. I get up every morning and I have a choice. I can dwell in faith or I can dwell in fear. You know, and for today, I've done my best anyway to put my will and life in the hands of a higher power. And it's his problem, not mine, you know. I'll give you a couple quick examples. I mentioned I used to fight a lot as an example of bravado, but really what that was about was that I was afraid about what my friends would think about me if I didn't put on airs, you know, or pretend to be something that I wasn't. And I was terrified every time I would fight with somebody. I had a little brother who was, his name is Ted, his name is Ted, who was a super genius, went to perfect SAT scores, went to Princeton on a scholarship, went to UC Berkeley, got a physics degree from Berkeley. And I had dyslexia, I couldn't read. I had a hard time reading. I mean, for years I couldn't read, and I would BS my way through school with my teachers were hippies from the 70s, and it was like, everything's fine, you could kind of do what you want. The classroom was really open, and they didn't really hold you. There was no SOLs, nothing like that, you know? And so I was really good at BSing people. And so, you know, I got up until almost into middle school, sixth grade, seventh grade, when they figured out this kid doesn't know how to read, you know? And so I was terrified, man, that people would find out that. You know, I was terrified about that, that they would find out I was a retard, you know, that something was wrong with me. And I just couldn't stand the idea of somebody knowing who I was, the truth about me, that I was a phony, you know, that I was a fake. And, you know, it's not like that anymore. You know, I don't feel that fear at that depth anymore. And I'm not saying I'm perfect, far from it. I mean, and I'm not immune from that even today, but I'm not like I was. And it's because of these steps and talking about it openly and being able to call another man, sponsor, or another brother in sobriety and say, I'm afraid that I have to go do whatever, a presentation in front of a group of people, or I'm afraid to confront my wife because she didn't empty the dishwasher, or, you know, something like that. I mean, whatever it is. And that type of ability to be able to share with people here, everything, you know, is going on. There's no other fellowship in the world. We have that type of intimacy and sincerity and being that genuine that I've been to, including, and I'm not going to listen, but whatever, man, any of them, you know. It's really magnificent. It's beautiful, man. So, anyways, that's what I got to say about that paragraph. Thank you.
Okay. We're going to continue on page 68. Perhaps there's a better way. We think so. For we are now on a different basis, the basis of trusting and relying upon God. We trust infinite God rather than our finite selves. We are in the world to play the role he assigns, just to the extent that we do as we think he would have us, and humbly rely on him, does he enable us to match calamity with serenity. We never apologize to anyone for depending upon our Creator. We can laugh at those who think spirituality the way of weakness. Paradoxically, it is the way of strength. The verdict of the ages is that faith means courage. All men of faith have courage. They trust their God. We never apologize for God. Instead, we let him demonstrate through us what he can do. We ask him to remove our fear and direct our attention to what he would have us be. At once, we commence to outgrow fear. Jen?
So I think, like a lot of people, maybe actually let me just stick to me. So when I first got sober, you know, obviously God was a very big issue for me. I grew up being taken to church. I never felt anything. My mom sent me to Jesus camp like 15 times. And some of the people there would be like really into it and like really having like a spiritual experience, and I felt nothing, and I was so like offended. I was like, why does God not let me feel that way? God is not interested in a relationship with me, so I've decided this is all BS, everybody's making it up, and none of this actually happens to anybody. They're just crazy. or lying, even worse. But, you know, I remember when I was actually like honest with my sponsor for the first time, because I had a sponsor for probably a good like 3-4 months before I actually like started telling the truth and getting sober and working steps. But you know, when I finally did, we had to have the God conversation, and she's like, well, where are you at with it? And I kind of explained, and she was like, okay. I was like, what do you mean okay? Like, that is, I can't work with that. That's not gonna, what is that supposed to do for me? And she's like, well, pick a conception that works then. And I was like, what do you mean? You can't do that. You can't just, I mean, it either is or isn't. And she's like, well, do you know what it is? And I was like, no. Do you? She's like, no. So pick one that works and see what happens. And at that point, I was so desperate that I was like, fine, whatever. I don't care. And, you know, I ended up sticking with, you know, it's just a power greater than myself that I don't understand. Because, you know, people always say, or not people always say, but the book says, you know, God as we understand him. And I don't claim to understand God. I don't know if I ever will. But I started seeing that when I was praying, it was working. And I thought somebody was, like, playing a trick on me. Like, I didn't know how that was possible. And I remember, you know, the obsession to drink was so strong in early sobriety for me. I mean, I would walk around every single day, just, like, headphones in, head down, like, don't drink, don't drink, don't drink, don't drink, don't drink. Like, terrified that I was going to drink, and I really didn't want to, but I really wanted to at the same time, and I was just like a wreck, you know. So I would pray and I would ask God, you know, please remove the obsession for alcohol. And you know, I remember when I woke up one day and I was like, oh my God, wait, I haven't thought about drinking in like probably a few days. And I was like so relieved. I could have started crying, like, oh my God, I'm free. And you know, I can't explain what the difference is between the day before I stopped obsessing about alcohol and the day I stopped obsessing about alcohol, other than I had been praying for it consistently, you know, while I was working the steps. And, you know, anybody who talked about spiritual experiences or spiritual awakenings, I would, like, look at them with disdain, because I thought that was, like, stupidity. And I'm not trying to be, like, mean. I'm just, that's genuinely what I thought when I first got sober. I was like, these people are stupid. Only stupid people believe in God. And, you know, that was my way of justifying to myself that, like, I can't have that, so I'm gonna hate it. And, You know, because I really thought, like, they get to experience something that I don't get to experience, so it must not be real, and it must be terrible to live like them. Oh my God, imagine being spiritual, ha ha ha. And it's like, oh my God, what was I thinking? Because it is so much better. And, you know, I like that living on the basis of trusting and relying upon God, and it's easier sometimes than it is other times. And it tends to be easier when things are going my way. You know, because if everything's going like, you know, rainbows and butterflies and I'm real happy, it's like, God is so great. And then I hit like one minor inconvenience and I'm like, oh, it's been fake this whole time. What was I thinking? And you know, all of a sudden I take my will back and I know better than God now, because this one thing is not the way that I think it should be. And, you know, I saw my life running on self-will. And it was not pretty. You know, I wasn't really getting anywhere. I almost didn't graduate high school. I'd been in treatment like 5 times before high school ended. Maybe 4. I don't know. Whatever. Not the point. Several times before, you know, even like 11th grade. And, you know, all my friends hated me. My family hated me. At least I felt like they did. I think they genuinely just did not know what to do with me anymore. You know, and I didn't know what to do with me anymore either, and I hated myself, and I hated you, and hated everything, and I was so mad and just terrified of everything all the time, just depressed and anxious, and every negative feeling you can think of under the sun, I was having it. And I was so self-centered. I thought that I was the only person in the world going through anything. You know, and when I do rely upon a power greater than myself, I stop thinking about what's going on inside my head, and I start seeing what's going on around me in the actual, like, real world, like on planet Earth. And, you know, I start to take interest in my fellows, just like the promises tell me I will. And you know, I start to really see that there are things beyond, you know, the edge of my nose that happen, and there are ways that I can be useful to other people. And you know, the big book tells me that's my whole purpose in doing these steps. Like, I get sober as a byproduct, but my point in getting sober is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. I'm fitting myself to be of maximum service to God and my fellows. And I didn't care about that when I got here. I was like, cool, fine, whatever. If it means I'm not gonna drink, then I'll do it. And you know, the steps start to take on a totally different meaning once you've done them. And you know, I recognized that throughout the process of doing it, you know, and the connection to a power greater than myself got better and better with each step that I took, and every day that I continued to go to a meeting and try to be useful, and, you know, and ask God to help me think about something other than myself, and you know, to help me see where I could be useful, to help me be willing to inconvenience myself to help others. And if there's one thing I don't like, it's being inconvenienced. I can't even sit in traffic. Like, I know people talk about traffic a lot as, like, this could be a reflection of your spirituality. And I'm like, please, I hope that's not true. Because I sit in the car. I commute to Newport News 4 times a week because I go to school out there. And, oh, my God. If you've ever been through the tunnel, then you feel my pain. And you know, I've had to learn, like, maybe not everything's about me, because not everybody else on the road is concerned about where I need to be and at what time I need to be there, but in my mind, you should be. You should be concerned about that. And, you know, relying on God just takes me out of myself, which is something that I need desperately, because if I'm not connected to a power greater than myself, I'm the only thing that exists to me. It's not one of my more redeeming qualities, I'll be honest, but it's a default for me. I wake up selfish. And you know, I pray every morning, you know, for God to help me be useful and to help me, you know, be aware of other people and to not think about myself, and ask God to direct my thinking. And it is notably different than days when I wake up and don't do that. I seem to be met with a lot more resistance. I'm a lot more unhappy. And I just have so much more anxiety, and I'm way more just unsettled, just off balance, you know, and matching calamity with serenity. That sounded very nice to me. I didn't know how that was gonna work, but, you know, when I pray about specific things now, and ask God to help me deal with them however I'm supposed to deal with them. Because a lot of times I don't know how, so I can't ask God, like, help me do this, because I don't even know what I'm supposed to do. So I'm just like, help me, thanks. That's like the whole prayer. And you know, it works. And if it didn't work, I wouldn't be sitting here saying that it worked. And oh, I heard a lot of people say that when I got here too, but like, I wouldn't be saying it if it didn't work. And I'm like, well, why are you saying it? Because it doesn't. And it does, though. And I wish that I could express to people who don't know me, like, I think it's super important that I'm saying that, but to everybody else, I'm just like another alcoholic talking about God. But like, I promise you it works if you just do it. And that's all I got on that.
Thanks, Jen. I love this paragraph that Dave read. So the fear problem's not, the fear problem or any other doesn't really work on self-reliance, right? And so it says, perhaps there's a better way, we think so. And so I was able to mask for a long time with booze, the fear that I was, you know, the fear that kind of ate away at my soul all the time. And then when I quit drinking, man, then all of a sudden everything is real, and I found myself afraid quite a bit, and so finding a higher power becomes really important, and that's something that doesn't come naturally to me. This paragraph, these next two paragraphs, they use the word reliance or dependence or trust, I think it's 8 times in those two paragraphs, you know, and that flies right in the face of me, my ego. It does not come natural to me, man. I like to be the boss. I'm the captain of my destiny. You know what I mean? But when I'm so afraid and I don't have any booze, you know, I go insane, man, if I don't have a higher power to take care of me, you know? So my choice is that I can drink to excess and slowly kill myself, or I can go a little bit nuts every day, or finally I can say, you know what, man? I've had enough. You got it. You know, whatever happens, happens, you know? And I found in my sobriety that it's not linear, man. It's not like I got sober and I suddenly like rocketed up towards sainthood, you know? I go like this. I go up and down, and then I, you know, I'm bossing and I'm back in charge and things like, she was saying like, yeah, I love my higher power when everything's going great. When things aren't going great, like, hey man, what's going on? I better take back over command, you know? And it's not going according to my will, George's will, I, you know? And I take the wheel back, but I mean, I even do that in the course of a given day, right? I mean, many times. I think it's a human nature. My favorite line in the whole big book, it says, we are not saints. We're not saints. The point is that we're only growing spiritual lines. And what makes me well in is pain, man. And so when I've had enough of whatever it is, I start to humbly rely and trust and depend, right? And similar to what she had said earlier, like, I don't even know exactly what that looks like or who he is or if it's a he or a she or whatever it is, you know? But I know darn well it ain't me. And it's something, and it's real, you know. There's no way I'd be sitting here sober tonight talking to you good people if there wasn't some higher power that had an effect in my life. I mean, it's proof, you know. If you think about the first step, basically the first step says we're doomed, you know. We're doomed. Unless there's something else out there, we're doomed, right? And so it's just as real as me sitting in this chair. And it's not for me or anybody else to say exactly what that power is, right? It doesn't matter what it is. I want to tell you that, this is a part of my recovery that I think is relevant. Every time I read this paragraph, I mean, I got notes on this book about it, and I want to share it with you. Okay. So this would have been like 15 years ago or 15 years ago or so. I was in business. I started this business with this guy. I won't tell you the details of it, but I had a lot of money tied up in it, and I had a lot of ego tied up in it. Actually, to be honest with you, I had more ego tied up in it, more pride tied up in it than I did money. And we did great for a couple of years, man. Great. And we were traveling all over the country, big dinners, and big money, a lot of money coming in, a lot of money going out. Sounds like Bill Wilson's story, you know, the banker watched with amused skepticism, you were all fat, checks in and out. And meanwhile, I had a relatively new wife. We had a baby, and we had an infant child, John, and Franklin was 4. And I'm on Chicago, Los Angeles, Las Vegas, Miami, and she's home, you know, raising the kids. She's from Costa Rica. beautiful lady, and we've been married 25 years now. And anyway, and she's a great wife, man. She's an Al-Anon, by the way, which saved our marriage. I just should mention that. But anyway, it's a long story, man, but just to cut to the chase, it became untenable. You know, it became untenable to have this business, and my business partner was really difficult to deal with. His wife was even worse. Maybe put that back in my next four step. But anyway, and my wife basically said, look, you know, this isn't really working. Why did you marry me and bring me back from Central America, have two kids here, and there I am, my sister, my mother, all my friends, I don't even know, you know, how to get around, and you're all not even around here, and so what's it going to be, you know? And I gave up the business, man, but it wasn't like I just gave it up because I was like a saint and that I suddenly realized this is the right thing to do. It was wicked hard for me to do that, right? And so we go to church, we still go to church. I went to church this one day when right all this was happening, right? And it just matters to me. It may not matter to you or anybody else. I don't care, you know, but it just matters to me. I took communion, and I was at the rail, and I said this prayer, and I was filled with fear, loaded with it, man, about money, about career, about how we're going to provide for the kids, about resentment against her and against my business partner's wife, and just loaded with fear and resentment, man, and far from our program, way far from my program, very much in this world, you know. So my prayer, anyway, was at the rail, the communion rail. I said, I swear to God, I mean, it's just as sincere as I can make. I said, God, I don't even care anymore what happens to me. I couldn't care less. Just let this stuff get off of my mind, and you put my hands to your work, and I'll forget about me completely, man. And I hadn't been to a lot of meetings. I hadn't sponsored anybody in years. And 24 hours from me saying that prayer, I had two brand new wet drunks. One called out of the blue. He said, I got your number a couple years ago. And this other guy went to a meeting, and I shared some crazy stuff, which was all I was capable of sharing. And the guy comes and says, I totally relate to you. Can you be my sponsor? And they were both wet, man. And they called constantly, man. They would never not call. They called all the time, you know? Adam and Anthony. And I think God sent me those two. Like, they were my angels, you know what I mean? To get me back in, you know? It's funny because, like, that's so far from sainthood, man. It's just like you're driven. I was driven to this point by ego, you know. And still, you know, God loved me enough to send me these two guys. And I'll tell you as an aside that Anthony's still sober, and I got a call from Adam. I don't know, 7 years ago, and he calls up. He left a message on the phone. He says, George, his voice is slurred. He said, I can't repeat word for word because we're in the church exactly what he said. He said, this is Adam. I'm drunk as a monkey, and I just want you to know you were the worst sponsor I've ever had in my life. Everything you said was wrong. He went off, man. He's a bunch of malarkey, and you stink. It's in New Mexico when he called. Anyways, whatever, man. That's all I have to say about that. Thank you.
That's awesome. We're going to continue on page 68. Now about sex. Many of us needed an overhauling there, but above all, we tried to be sensible on this question. It's so easy to get way off track. Here we find human opinions running to extremes, absurd extremes, perhaps. One set of voices cries that sex is the lust of our lower nature, a base necessity of procreation. Then we have the voices who cry for sex and more sex, who bewail the institution of marriage, who think that most of the troubles of the race are traceable to sex causes. They think we don't have enough of it, or that it isn't the right kind. They see its significance everywhere. One school would allow a man no flavor for his fare, and the other would have us all on a straight pepper diet. We want to stay out of this controversy. We do not want to be the arbiters of anyone's sex conduct. We all have sex problems. We'd hardly be human if we didn't. What can we do about them? Janet?
Okay, so this is a tricky topic for me because I'm very opinionated. And that paragraph literally just told me that my opinions do not matter even a little bit. And I love it when AA does that. Like, I love it when AA, like, gives a little jab and you almost can't even tell. Like, it literally just told me, like, we don't care about your opinions and nobody else does either. So you probably shouldn't tell other people what they should do and they can't tell you what to do. And, like, there are a couple lines in the big book like that. Like, my favorite one, I'm getting off topic, but I'm going to mention this one line because I love it. It's in the doctor's opinion, and it talks about the manifestation of an allergy, and it says, our opinion, as laymen, our opinion to its soundness may mean little. And that sentence is literally saying, like, you're not a doctor, shut up. And I love that. Anyway, so yeah. So, I mean, I love that, and I love that when I was reading this, AA told me, word for word, we do not want to be the arbiter of anyone's sex conduct. Because it immediately told me right then, my opinion doesn't matter, your opinion doesn't matter, this is you and God 100%. And I can work with that. And I'm not gonna like launch into a sociology lecture. I will after the meeting if you'd like.
Thank you, I appreciate that.
But I am gonna share my experience, you know? And I think there's something that women deal with more so than men, is there's an inherent shame built around sex when it comes to women. And, you know, this was evident in the way that I felt when I was going through my inventory, the way I was worried about how my sponsor's going to see me, and oh my God, what if she tells someone XYZ, and now she's going to think this about me or that about me. And to be honest, she did not care at all. Because, I mean, she did the steps, and she gets the book, and she's like, I don't care. And thanks for telling me your inventory. Like, it was a fifth step. It was just, like, a fifth step to her. It was not a ranking of my character or my morals or whatever. And, you know, I think the bigger thing here is, you know, that I will do anything for ease and comfort or for sensation or for something. Like, I jumped out of a plane on my 20th birthday for no good reason other than I wanted to feel something crazy. And, you know, I drive really fast on the highway because I'm like, ooh, it's fun. And it's dangerous. And it's like, really? That's so stupid. So stupid. And I'm sober and I do this. And, you know, it's anything. You know, no substance was off limits to me. Anything I could get my hands on was fine. I just needed to feel something other than what I feel sober. And, you know, I don't have to do things that I don't want to do for ease and comfort anymore because I have AA, because I have the program. And, you know, the book tells me that I drink for ease and comfort. You know, men and women drink essentially because they like the effect produced by alcohol. And that's exactly why I drink. I loved being drunk. And, you know, I meet people who quit drinking and they're like, I hated drinking at the end. And I cannot relate. I mean, I was throwing up blood and I was still like, can't wait to get another drink, man. Like, I needed to be drunk all the time. It was completely beyond my control. And, you know, but I needed ease and comfort. I needed relief. And, you know, I can get that through the program now. You know, I get relief from a higher power. I get relief from fellowship with other alcoholics. I get relief from being useful to other people and showing up for people and sponsoring people and going to meetings and actually participating instead of just sitting there. And because I can do that too. Like, I can sit in a meeting and be like, wow, nobody said anything I needed to hear. And it's like, great, maybe it wasn't for you. Because in my mind, everything's for me. And I think I've made that pretty clear at this point. But that's another thing to worry about too, is selfishness crops up in this area a lot. And you know, it's hard not to be selfish. Because my instinct, you know, like, it's everything in the St. Francis Prayer. George was talking about it before the meeting, the St. Francis Prayer. And it reminds me, like, my default is to do all the things that it's telling me not to do in that prayer. Like, I'm seeking comfort, and I am seeking to be understood, and I am seeking not to understand or to bring love and hope and wherever there's fear and whatever it says. It says a lot of stuff. I can't remember it. My point is that, you know, I default to selfishness every single time. And I have to involve God, even in the things that are uncomfortable or don't feel like, oh, well, that has nothing to do with God. And it's like that, it's kind of not the case because everything in my life is about God in some sense. And, you know, my relationships with other human beings are key in my sobriety, and they're very powerful in how I feel, how I behave, how I feel about myself, you know, because it has a lot to do with, like, you know, am I being useful to these people? Are they, you know, is this an even trade-off? Like, am I just giving of myself and getting nothing in return? And all these things that I worry about, like, am I being honest? Are they being honest with me? Like, you know, is this a give and take? Like, is this a healthy relationship? Like, all this back and forth, because resentment can throw me off, dishonesty can throw me off, you know, self-reliance instead of allowing others into my life can throw me off. So anything that has to do with another human being is absolutely a good venue for me to be talking to God. Because if I'm doing what I think is the right thing, I could be very wrong, and those consequences could be very bad. Because I get resentments quick, and I hang on for dear life. It's very hard for me to let go of things. And, you know, if I'm not keeping myself set up to be in a position where I don't have to question everything I'm doing, because I know that I'm living on a spiritual basis, then everything just goes a lot smoother. I don't find myself doing things and then being pissy about it 5 minutes later, or, you know, regretting things, or, you know, being mad at the other person because, like, you're not doing what I think you should be, and you're not being as nice to me as you should be, and you don't call me enough. And it's like, take it, like, five steps back, and when's the last time you prayed about anything having to do with this relationship? And typically I find that my relationships that don't involve God do not go well. You know, and I can't chalk that up to coincidence anymore, because it's just been too constant in my life that just, like, logically it doesn't make sense to think that that's a coincidence, because every time I involve God, it works out better. So I think I'm just gonna keep doing it, even if it's not, like, even if it's not the truth or I have it all wrong. Like, I don't really care at this point if it's true, because it works. So, you know, I've just found that to be my experience on the matter.
Thank you.
So yeah, so I can tell you that, like, on my fourth step, what I found out was that that, like, the sex, the desire for sex, I exhibited a lot of selfishness, which was you know, typical in a lot of ways besides just with sex, that that what I like to think about most and my favorite subject in the world is me and what's in it for me. You know, what can I get out of it? It's only by having been in AA and trying to do this program for a while that I've even given a nod toward trying to be of service and how can I be, you know, helpful to somebody, whether it's a sick and suffering alcoholic or my wife, you know. And I have learned a little bit about that here, but those aren't, you know, that's not how I came out of the womb, man. I came out of the womb thinking about me, you know? And so somewhere I end in the 12 and 12, they talk about instincts going awry, you know, and you know, the desire for the sex instinct just as natural, like procreation or whatever. And what I found when I wrote down a lot of the things that I did on my fourth and fifth step later with a sponsor was that I had hurt a number of people with my selfishness in trying to satisfy my instincts, which is exactly what it says in here and in the 12 and 12, right? And I had remorse and regret over that. And this is getting a little further afield, but then I got a lot of relief actually by making amends to some of the people that I had harmed. I think it's important for me too to recognize, like, my story was that with a higher power and sex, they just don't go together. The deal is you say no, and there's no sex in my where I was raised, and until you get married, right? And then so the concept of being able to take an issue, like, you want to get laid to your higher power, say, hey, God, is it okay? You know, and I mean, just that whole idea, it was completely new to me, right? Which is pretty, imagine you couldn't really go out to your men's Bible study. Hey, guys, you know, it's just, but you can do it here, right? Yeah. You absolutely can. What do you call, think about this. You can read your sponsors, every single time they call you, it's either about a girl or about money. At least it is with me. You cut down through the BS, it's always that, right? So what a relief, man, that we can talk, like, openly about that. And, you know, and we don't have to, you know, be self-righteous or judgmental. We share experience, faith, and hope. And, you know, it's a part of it, too, is in my case, it's a maturing thing. Like, it just, like, I was very immature when I got here. Not to say I'm super mature. Now, I started with the Three Stooges, right? How mature could I be, right? But part of it is just mature, man, just growing up, you know, and in sobriety, you kind of learn things. And instead of just, like, kind of smacking your head against the wall over and over and learning nothing, right? And so part of it, I think, is just, in my case, at least, was just growing up. But I tell you, man, fear and sex, these are two of my favorite subjects. I'll pass on that. Thank you.
We're running out of time, so I'm going to do two paragraphs, and we'll call it good on the reading. So we're going to continue on page 69. We reviewed our conduct over years past. Where had we been selfish, dishonest, or inconsiderate? Whom had we hurt? Did we unjustifiably arouse jealousy, suspicion, or bitterness? Where were we at fault? What should we have done instead? We got this all down on paper and looked at it. In this way, we tried to shape a sane and sound ideal for our future sex life. We subjected each relation to this test. Was it selfish or not? We asked God to mold our ideals and help us to live up to them. We remembered always that our sex powers were God-given and therefore good, neither to be used lightly or selfishly, nor to be despised and loathed. And then on page 70, it says, to sum up about sex, we earnestly pray for the right ideal, for guidance in each questionable situation, for sanity and for strength to do the right thing. If sex is very troublesome, we throw ourselves the harder into helping others. We think of their needs and work for them. This takes us out of ourselves. It quiets the imperious urge when to yield would mean heartache. In this book, you read again and again that faith did for us what we could not do for ourselves. We hope you are convinced now that God can remove whatever self-will has blocked you off from him. If you have already made a decision and an inventory of your grosser handicaps, you have made a good beginning. That being so, you have swallowed and digested some big chunks of truth about yourself. Shannon?
David? So for that first part, the first two paragraphs we read from page 69, that is where God gets really important in the process. And I feel like I've shared a whole lot about God on this one, but it's an inventory, so I always need God, because particularly with this stuff, if I'm taking my inventory with no higher power, I'm going to come up 100% every single time. Like, my behavior will look flawless to me because I have every rationalization, every justification, everything I do makes complete and perfect sense. So there's no problems here. And you know, when I really review my own conduct, the selfishness, dishonesty, and inconsiderate, that comes up a lot. And, you know, it's very easy to make excuses. Like, oh, I didn't really hurt anybody's feelings. I didn't really care. You know, we're like, well, you know, they hurt my feelings as much as I hurt theirs. And you can go on and on forever about all these reasons that you're not selfish, dishonest, or inconsiderate when, you know, point blank, really, I'm all three. And inconsiderate, particularly when it comes to these issues, like, there's, like, I don't want to, like, psychoanalyze myself right now, but I'm very mean to boys. I don't know why. It's probably fear, because we were just talking about that. But, you know, that's the kind of thing that, like, I have to look at that, because I can't go through my life being mean to / hating half the population of planet Earth. Because it's just going to keep me angry, it's going to keep me afraid, and it's going to keep me in resentment. And I can't afford that. And I can't afford to feel the way I feel about myself when I'm knowingly hurting other people. I don't want to do that anymore. I used to want to do that, because it's like, you hurt my feelings, I'm going to make you feel really bad. And now, if I make somebody feel bad, like, even completely unintentionally, I can't stop thinking about it for, like, 5 days. Like, at least, bare minimum. And I have a very guilty conscience, and it's simply because I actually care about other people now. Having taken the steps, having realized the importance of other people in my life, having realized, you know, the importance of living these principles, you know, has completely changed my outlook on any relationship that I have. And you know, I love when it says that sex powers are God-given and therefore good, neither to be used lightly or selfishly, nor to be despised and loathed. Because when it talks about those human opinions being extreme, I feel like those are definitely the two that you find. And, you know, the last part really just sums it up perfectly for me. Like, we earnestly pray for the right ideal, for guidance in each questionable situation, for sanity and the strength to do the right thing. And it's like, boom. Boom. That's the whole thing. That's like, that's an instruction. And I love that in the big book. It's just full of instructions. Anytime it tells me to ask God for something, I just have to do that. And more often than not, it works. If I understand why I'm doing what I'm doing, if I understand that I'm not doing this as a means to an end, I'm doing it because I genuinely want to be compassionate. I genuinely want to be useful to other people. I genuinely want to stay sober and help others stay sober. I'm not doing any of this because I have to. I'm not doing any of this because it looks real nice on the outside. I'm doing these things because these are actually ideals that I have now that have been shaped by a higher power. And you know, it sounds so, like, lovely, but it's hard. And there's a lot of doubt that comes back for me all the time. And, you know, there'll be times if I can't sleep, I'm up at, like, 3 a.m. and my eyes, like, snap open and I'm like, what if God's not real? And it's like, all right, go to sleep and try to figure it out tomorrow. Like, you know, because I cannot let doubt take over the fact that my life is significantly and notably better than it was when I was living without a God, when I was living as if I was God. And, you know, saying that faith did for us what we could not do for ourselves. And that's something that I try to stress to people, because it's been so evident in my experience that, you know, I really can't do a whole lot for myself. And I heard somebody say in a meeting the other day that, you know, he was struggling with a power greater than himself until he realized that it's not really hard to be greater than me. And, and God, was that so true. It's like, I can't even drink a beer and continue to function. So, not that hard to be greater than me. And, you know, so I just try to remember that me running things does not work, and the God idea does. And it's really that simple. It's do this or do that. And, you know, it mentions that a couple times in the big book. Like, to die an alcoholic death or to live on a spiritual basis are not always easy alternatives. And that's so true. Because sometimes I'm like, I could pray about this and feel better, but I'm not going to do that. I'm going to stay pissed for a few more minutes. Then I'll pray so that this goes away. And, you know, it's hard to give up control, to give up power, but the whole point of the whole beginning of the book is that I am utterly powerless. I'm powerless over alcohol. I'm powerless over others. I'm powerless over everything, pretty much. And, you know, if I want to live in such a way that I have ease and comfort without having to drink myself blind every second I get, you know, it's doing this. It's doing what it says in the book. And I'll say this and then stop, but, you know, I always used to say, like, it feels like everybody got a handbook for life, and I just didn't get one, because I always felt like everybody else knew what they were doing, and I didn't, and it's so funny to me that I wound up in AA, because, like, now I literally have a handbook for life. I literally have a handbook for life, so I just try to use it as much as I possibly can, because the answer is always in there if I'm willing to see it. Thanks.
Thank you. I love what Shannon said about a handbook for life. Never thought about that before. It's cool. Imagine being called 1939 and he's still using it like today, like it was brand new. Anyway, I'll just say really briefly, we're on a short time, but I'll say this real quick, that in a general way, with Shannon, generally, without being specific, that this winter's been really hard for my family and I for different reasons. My wife going through a hard time with certain things. And my mom's got dementia, Alzheimer's, and one of my sons, he's in a lot of difficulties, you know, which has a heck of an impact on us. And so, and I've been working way too hard the winter season. I assistant wrestle coach after I teach high school Spanish, and I assistant wrestle coach. That's my job. So I work a ton of hours in the winter, right? And so what matters to me then is that I work my program harder than ever, even without being able to make a meeting every night during the week, right?
And so what that means to me is this line in here about, it says, we throw ourselves the harder into helping others. It says, if sex is very troublesome. The older I get, man, the imperious urge, you know, subsides quite a bit, right? But sorry, anyhow. But I got, you know, if I could frame it in terms of relationships, you know, and just dealing with life on life's terms, that throwing myself the harder into working with others is a tonic for people like me. You know, instead, I naturally want to think about how bad I got and where's God and where were. Do you see what just happened? Did you see what she said? Do you see what happened to my mother or my son? And you see how hard I'm working and why me, poor me, and that if I can get on the phone and there's always somebody, man, usually another alcoholic is going through something way worse or just having a hard time. And I've got my little message, man, for what it's worth, you know. And I'll be the first to admit, I don't have the greatest story. I don't have an entourage of sponsees following me around, but I got my little story and I'm willing to share it, you know. And I pick up the phone and find somebody that needs some help, man. It's a tonic, man. It works every single time. And I hang up the phone and I think, wow, man, look, God bless his heart. And I'm saying, now I'm praying for him. I'm thinking about him instead of about me, you know? And then I'm not miserable and full of self-pity anymore. It's an amazing thing that I only learned it in here, right? This is a wonderful fellowship. It's a beautiful program. We're blessed people, and it's an honor. Like, to sit here, you good people, man. I should be sitting around a wonderful bunch of people. I didn't do anything really to deserve it. I think it's grace what got me here. And furthermore, I think my mother prayed me in here. She's sober in AA too, even though she's got dementia. She prayed me in here, I think, a number of years ago. That's it, thank you.
Awesome.
Thanks, George.
All right, we're gonna pass the Seven Tradition basket. Seven Tradition says that every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the Seven Tradition is essential. At every level of AA service, it is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their inner group, central office, local services, district, area, and general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose to help the alcoholic who still suffers. Our common welfare, a word about safety. Your safety is important. Calling the proper authorities does not go against any AA traditions and is recommended when someone may have broken the law or endangered the safety of another person. Our group endeavors to provide a safe meeting place for all attendees and encourages each person here to contribute to fostering a secure and welcoming environment in which our meeting can take place. Are there any announcements for the benefit of AA? I have one. Principals group meets in Chesapeake tomorrow night. Harvest Assembly Church of God, I believe is the name of it. I believe their potluck starts at 6. But anyway, tomorrow night, principal group is having their celebration. They usually put on a good spread, and they usually have a dynamite speaker tomorrow night. Anybody else? Okay. Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting. Home group members. Newcomers, you are the reason we're here. Is there anyone here tonight in their first 30 days of sobriety? We'd just like to welcome you by first name.
Isaac.
Welcome. Anybody else? There's literature available on that table over there. Please see a home group member if you'd like to purchase a book. Sponsorship in Alcoholics Anonymous is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, I will be available at this table after we close this meeting. Please feel free to talk to me. Reminders, smokers, please use the butt can provided. Did we get that butt can hooked up? Awesome. And stay well away from the church doors. All meeting audio recordings and upcoming events are posted on our website, simpleactions.net. Could we please thank this wonderful panel? After we clean up, all are invited and encouraged to continue the conversation on the step discussed tonight at the meeting after the meeting, which will be held at Plaza del Sol, 22nd and Colonial. Could I have a volunteer to read the last two paragraphs on Shannon?
Sharon? It's all good.
Debbie? Bob?
Suggested only. We realize we know only a little. God will disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
Thank you, everybody. Let's pray. Shaduti?
Our Father?
Our Father. Who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever.